Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the Bruegel podcast. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director of Bruegel, and I'm today joined by Sven Giegold, an eminent member of the European Parliament from the Green Party Group, and I would say a leading voice in many, many topics regarding European economic policy, taxation policy also. Welcome, Sven.
Hi, Guntram. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Sven, for joining. So the idea today is to talk about your recent work with a group of Italian and German economists, which put into spotlight the issue of taxation and tax evasion, and the fact that bigger companies tend to pay little taxes, and the taxes that they do pay, they often do not pay them in the countries where they make the profits, but in smaller EU member states. So perhaps you want to start by giving us the main ideas of your recent article, and then we develop that discussion further.
Thank you, and with pleasure. So the idea of this initiative, which has been supported now by more than 4,000 citizens, and it is rather rare that citizens sign calls for tax measures. Tax measures are normally not the most popular topics for citizens, but when it comes to fighting the misuse of tax competition, tax avoidance, tax evasion, and also money laundering, my impression is more and more people understand how big the losses actually are. So what we suggest is basically to say, after the corona crisis, somehow the holes in the buckets of public coffers has to be filled. And there's obviously a tendency to restart austerity measures. We do not think that this is the right idea, neither from an economic policy point of view, nor from a public good policy perspective. So we have important public goods such as climate, tackling the climate crisis, such as limiting economic inequalities, integrating people with difficulties into our society, global competition in education. All this requires public spending, and therefore we cannot afford a new wave of one-sided austerity measures. And one of the obvious measures Europe could do in order to fill public coffers is to make sure that everybody pays fairly what they are supposed to pay, rather than general tax increases. And therefore, we are calling basically for five different measures. On the one hand, Europe needs a common corporate tax base. It needs to consolidate this tax base and then apply minimum tax rates on a European level, in particular if a global agreement is not to be reached. Of course, a global agreement would be better, but if we can't get a global agreement, we need this. Beyond that, large corporations, not SMEs, but large corporations should report publicly in which member state they pay how much corporate income tax. And for the digital world, we need a clear framework for digital taxation. And therefore, again, if we cannot reach a global agreement, we have to do this in Europe. Third, we need to tackle the tax fraud in the area of VAT. So VAT reform is an old subject. More than 20 years this goes on as a debate. Probably no other area of financial fraud is so big as VAT in Europe. And the Commission proposal is there, and the member states should finally adopt the respective proposal. The Parliament has taken its decision, so we are waiting for this. Also, we have the recurrent and different forms of dividend arbitrage, which is more known as cum-ex, cum-cum, and the like. For this, European solutions could help ending structurally this form of tax fraud. Then, the European Union has to be careful with the progressive income tax. The progressive income tax is very important in order to limit inequality. Consumption taxes are above average paid by those on lower incomes, and therefore it's very important that the progressive income tax balances the unfair effects of consumption taxes. And therefore it is important that we do not allow tax competition in the European Union to proliferate into the personal income tax. And this is on the way, so we see in more and more member states with targeted special regimes for the taxation of the of those with high income in order to attract them to relocate, in particular when they grow older. And Italy has recently introduced such a scheme, so where you pay lump sums in income tax rather than being taxed progressively on your income. And lastly, Europe has to tackle together money laundering and financial crime, not only with the European Common Supervisor, which seems now to be more and more a consensus policy, but also with the European Financial Intelligence Unit and the European Financial Police. And all this is, of course, a long wish list. But the last point is how to get it done. And the big question is how to move to majority voting. And for this, there are several options, but the most promising one is to adopt all those proposals which can already be done without problems now in majority voting, in particular country-by-country reporting, so corporate tax transparency, which can be voted in majority voting, and then to move progressively important areas of tax cooperation under Article 116, which is supposed to tackle distortion of competition in the single market. And this article has never been used, and it is high time that we actually do this and break the deadlock over tax cooperation in the European Union.
Great. Thanks for this first very long overview and, as you say, also a wish list. Now, let's perhaps try to unpack some of these points in some more detail and also take a step back, keeping in mind also that not all of our listeners are specialists in European law and in European tax matters. And so perhaps we can start really from the big picture again and unpack a bit the question why a taxation policy and corporate taxation policy in particular has anything to do with the European Union. After all, taxation policy is exercised at the national level. Countries, so national parliaments decide on how much they want to tax companies that are located in their territory. And countries also fiercely, and some countries more than others, fiercely defend the right to tax their companies and actually use the revenues. So perhaps we can first start explaining, and you can start explaining to our listeners, what makes it this case so particularly strong in the European Union to actually coordinate and collaborate closely on taxation. I mean, why don't we do the same thing and why shouldn't we do the same thing with other countries, with the United States, with China, God knows with whom? Why is there a special case at the EU level and why is it so urgent in your view?
I would say that the competition between local companies and transnational companies is particularly strong in the common market. So we are a highly integrated market, and therefore if tax competition, which is unfair, hits much harder inside of the common market than outside. And also, I would agree, once you operate in the common market, you should pay a part of the taxes you are due globally inside of the common market. So this is not exclusive to Europe headquartered companies, but applies also to companies headquartered elsewhere. So therefore, when I say tackling European tax competition, this should apply to all who are operating in the common market in order to ensure fair competition.
Right. So the very close integration of the European market, I think, is a very strong argument to look into. And the fact that we have capital mobility in the common market, meaning that you can locate your capital and your production wherever you want to in the single market, makes tax competition a particularly difficult topic, and I think requires at some stage some coordination of or even a common minimum corporate tax base. And as regards the global companies, I mean, if I can push you a little bit on one counter argument that is often used, it is the counter argument that if we were to start, and perhaps you can frame that also in the context of the digital tax, if we as Europeans were to start taxing those companies heavily based on their amount of activity in Europe, wouldn't other jurisdictions such as China or the United States be able to start and justify it and be ready to start taxing our companies, our global companies, Volkswagen or others that operate abroad and make profits abroad, also based on their sales abroad? I think one of the reasons why, for example, Germany was rather lukewarm at the beginning about this idea of tax based on location and based on sales was exactly that fear.
Sure. So first, I think there are more strong economic arguments. So if capital allocation in the common market is distorted by targeted and strong tax incentives, it leads to the allocation of capital, not because it's the best use of the capital, but because the taxation is hyper-low. So this leads to concentration of certain forms of capital investment in areas where it shouldn't be normally from an efficiency point of view. So therefore, I think there are more and equally strong economic arguments. You can see this also the result of a overheated local property market in Luxembourg, for which then poorer people in Luxembourg have to pay because they can't afford anymore the rent. That is also a form of economic inefficiency. But when it comes to your argument, it's fully true that the German government was always reluctant, also on a global level, to support any moves to tax corporate profits where at the point of sale. This was a long debate between developing countries and richer industrialized countries. And I always was of the opinion that the position of Germany was very egoistic towards the poorest countries in the world. But now the losses, because of the global tax competition raised to the bottom in corporate taxation, are so big that this even for a net surplus country in trade probably is not a loss business. But I agree, the best would be we have a global agreement, we allow the countries which consume more and produce a bit less to get also their part of the cake, and by that way ensure more equal and fair competition. And this would overcompensate probably potential losses, even for a country with unhealthy export surpluses as Germany.
Okay, before we talk about tax fraud and money laundering and the other points you made, let me ask you, since you are also a politician, now we talked a lot about optimal allocation, optimal taxation, but let's talk a bit about the politics. Of course, you are a member of the European Parliament and you are a Green member of the European Parliament. So your party is not in government in Germany, it's not in government in many countries. But of course, the point you are making, I think, is not only seen by the Greens at this stage, but I think there are more and more parties on the left that tend to move in this direction. I think we recently had the German finance minister speaking, Olaf Scholz, and he was actually making the interesting point that a fiscal union with tax arbitrage, corporate tax arbitrage, is really unsustainable ultimately. And so since the Next Generation EU is a step in the direction of some sort of a fiscal union, certainly the topic has gained increasing relevance and importance. So can you just give us a sense of where you see the politics of this going in the coming months or years, perhaps?
Yes. So first, when I started with this subject in the European Parliament, there was a clear left-right divide. So parties on the center-left, except those parties which followed a certain myth of national sovereignty in economic policy, like some Swedish social democrats and some leftist parties in the GUE, but they were generally, it was a center-left issue, tax harmonization in Europe. This has changed totally. Many in the liberal and the Christian Democratic group support us today. So it's not you can go further towards Christian democracy than Olaf Scholz, if I may make that joke. And beyond that is, so support is growing. I think the only reason why we have so many difficulties still in this area is that tax policy is consensus matter, and the parliament has only an advisory role and not a full co-decision role. This is, of course, totally outdated, but we have to live with this. And my view is the emptier the coffers of the state, the bigger the chances to get these things done. And therefore, the moment is just right for a new offensive for tax fairness in Europe, because it's needed for the economic stability of our public budgets. I would be a bad politician not to rebut your claim on the power of the Greens. We are in many governments now. Basically, every other month, there's a new Green presence in the government. Now in Belgium, you can, of course, say Belgium is not a real country. Well, I will not comment on this, but your institution is based here. So,
I didn't say it's not a real country.
No, I'm only saying that this is the most recent. And in Germany, as you know, no tax law can be passed without the support of the Greens. That's because right. We are in so many Länder governments that in many important areas of legislation, it needs also support of us Greens. And we are therefore also in Germany in co-responsibility.
Right. Perhaps one word on still on the politics as regards the transatlantic relation and the U.S. elections. If there is a change in the president, how do you see that play out?
I think generally the attitude towards multilateralism will improve somewhat, but, and that's a big but, also a Joe Biden needs for international treaties the parliamentary support and the two-third majority in the Senate. And this will not soon be democratic. And when it comes to the taxation of the digital world, there is no big difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And this is why I was always skeptical that we will ever get a global agreement without having Europe moving forward first. So when Trump made his tax reform, he didn't ask for permission in Europe. He simply did it. And then he negotiated under Trump in the OECD over corporate tax reform. Why is Europe talking a lot about sovereignty, but not daring to make European tax reform and waiting for a permission from the United States? I think that's quite naive. It's not self-confident. We are in favor of a global agreement, also as Greens, but we do not see why Europe should ask for permission first.
Very strong words. Let's talk then one more minute about Europe and then a bit about the VAT issue. But before coming to the VAT issue, I want to ask you really about how can we achieve it within the EU? How can we achieve the consensus and the unanimity that in many cases, I think in almost all tax decision matters, is needed? I mean, the previous commission had proposed employ and use the so-called passerelle clause, which would allow to, after a first unanimous decision, afterwards to have a QMV decision. But that hasn't been pursued. So how are we moving in this? I mean, we are stuck. I mean, even at the height of the financial crisis with Ireland, I remember that very vividly when Ireland was receiving financial assistance, there was a debate whether that should be part of the story. I mean, opening up the corporate taxation bottleneck, and it was vividly and strongly rejected. So how can their progress be made?
Well, look, when it comes to the Irish episode, true, but everybody had a bad conscience because the rest of the Eurozone pushed Ireland into bailing out banks they didn't want to bail out. So they had a lot of public debt piled up during the crisis, which they never wanted to pile up. They did it anyway. And therefore, there was such a high reluctance to put additional conditionality on them. And as you know, there was even a way found to neutralize this public debt with ECB money, which never stopped Christian democracy and liberals and the German government to say this is never to be done, and still agreeing by the back door with such a socialization of Irish public debt. And this is one of the most interesting episodes of the financial crisis in Europe. However, how can we get to the consensus? I think we can't. So you will not get member states voluntarily to move to fully fledged ending of harmful tax competition. No way. I think the only way to get there is that we move to majority vote. And Juncker, when he proposed to use the Passerelle clause, this was basically only suggested in order to avoid having to use Article 116. Article 116 allows already for majority voting on tax matters if there is a strong distortion of competition, which is clearly the case in the field of digital taxation, in some areas of environmental taxation, and in corporate income taxation. And I would even argue that in some other forms of capital income taxation, you see this. So, for instance, zero tax regimes and double income taxes, tax regimes with withholding taxes for dividends and capital gains. So you have already a strong case, but Juncker didn't want to go that route. But he wanted to make a gesture on majority voting. So he offered something of which he was certain that he would never have to go to use it. And now, but the difference is, the new commission is determined to use Article 116. Von der Leyen promised it. She has, of course, the full support of Vestager and also of the tax commissioner, Paolo Gentiloni. And therefore, it will come beginning next year, and we are looking forward to it. But waiting for consensus is waiting for Godot.
Right, very clear words on this. Let's use the last couple of minutes that we have to talk about the tax fraud and VAT, because you mentioned it as one of the biggest issues of financial fraud. And it is a topic that has also received a lot of attention from, for example, the Polish government, interestingly. And the Polish government wanted to reduce that kind of cross-border VAT tax fraud. And in my understanding, they quite succeeded to reduce it by means of digitalizing a lot of the invoicing processes. Can you say a few words where you see the VAT tax fraud debate and what can be done concretely?
So first, I fully agree with you that Poland, on all the tax cooperation files, has been much more helpful than Germany. It's not only that they themselves became more active, which would be consistent with the more national sovereignty discourse, only enforcing their own laws. No, Poland has also been supportive of all major legislative changes on the European level against tax fraud, tax evasion, tax competition, money laundering. Poland is on the right side of the debate, which is rather confusing, and often you find German government not on the right side of the debate. So Poland is much closer to the French and Italian position on these matters. So when it comes to VAT, I agree with you, it is to a significant part a lack of resources, a lack of digital resources of the tax administration. Of course, pushing the companies to digitalize is also helpful, but it's also a matter of administration. The reason why Germany has so high losses is because our tax administration is badly organized. It is in the hands of the lender, and the lender compete with each other. They use different digital systems. I know people who work on fighting VAT fraud in Germany. It's a nightmare. But of course, Europe could structurally end the whole business case by changing when VAT is to be paid. So at the moment, the whole basis of the so-called carousel fraud is that you first get your VAT refund and only later you pay VAT on the product which you are selling. So if you change that system, then the basis of the whole carousel fraud is gone. So therefore, even if Germany tax administration is a mess, you can do structurally changes and reforms on the European level, which end the whole business case. That doesn't stop that Germany's tax system need and administration has to be reformed profoundly. And I'm lucky if Poland has done its job.
No, indeed. I mean, the digitalization of the German tax system is something that still requires a lot of work. I can also say from personal experience, having to deal from time to time with the German tax authorities. Very last point, you mentioned money laundering, and the issue of money laundering is, of course, also very dear to also some of my colleagues, including my colleague Nicolas Véran, who has made proposals on
how... I hope he is in favor of anti-money laundering.
Anti-money laundering, absolutely. So measures to improve anti-money laundering, including stronger executive competences and supervisory competences, so institutional, basically an institutional response to the issue. But you mentioned it's not just about those authorities. What else is it about?
Well, first, when I see Nicolas the next time, I will tease him with his money laundering activities. So thank you for uncovering this. And I'm sure many of your listeners will be interested in this as well. And beyond that, I think it's important to understand that the fight against money laundering is not mainly an issue of financial supervision. So right. The finance ministers deal with this as if it is similar to building up a new supervisor, right? We need common supervisory powers in cases of large actors which are obliged entities under the anti-money laundering rules of Europe. And we need more harmonization of the rules. So therefore, it's a good idea from the Commission and the Parliament to move the directive on anti-money laundering to a regulation. But in order to be really successful, you need law enforcement capacity. And if you have international crime, European crime, you need international law enforcement actors. And that's why the Parliament is calling for a European FIU, Financial Intelligence Unit, and a European Financial Police. The total budget of Europol is only 5% of the American FBI. It's even less. And this shows what Europe needs. We need a common actor to enforce, to chase criminals and enforce our legislation also in the criminal area. And this is what we need in order to catch money laundering such as Nicolas Véran.
Such as Nicolas Véran trying to prevent it. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Sven. I think we covered a lot of ground, a lot of technical ground, but I think a lot of ground that many citizens are actually concerned about and worried about, because when you look at the broader tax revenue picture for many EU countries, you indeed see that more and more tax burden falls on essentially consumption tax and personal income tax, and corporate income tax revenues tend to fall in many, many countries over decades already. And so citizens are worried that, you know, we get basically too little taxation of those that can afford it, and too much taxation of basically the middle class. And I think that's a real concern. And so I think following this file is very interesting. And I thought your insights were very thoughtful and very inspiring. So thank you. Thank you for joining us, Sven. And thank you for our listeners to joining us to this episode of The Sound of Economics. We will talk with further MEPs in the coming weeks to hear about their main political and economic agendas going forward. Thank you again, and until next time.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.